I'm going to talk with you about the passage that Rick read, and I'm going to call this the devil's box, and that'll become apparent. It's not your regular box that I am talking about, but that to which Jesus, I believe, alludes in this passage. In this passage, I especially want you to look at verses 31 and 32. That will form the basis for our thoughts this morning, and really our outline. The four things I want to talk about are all in that passage. The Lord said to Peter, "Simon, Simon, Satan hath desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat. And I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren." I want us to think about the reality of Satan. I want us to look at a particular method that he uses with us. He is so clever, and our adversary knows what will get to us and what gets to people generally. And so he was going to employ that in his work against Peter. And then I want us to notice the prayer of Jesus, and that he prayed that Simon's faith fail not. And so the importance of our faith as we are faced with the tricks of Satan, as we are faced with the ways that he seeks to entrap us. And then finally, our influence upon other people as we stand and as we are strong, that we then are able to help others. In the first place, Satan wants you. He wanted Peter. And Jesus, as it were, pulls aside the veil and gives us a glimpse, briefly, into the spirit world and shows us that there is a mighty struggle going on for the soul of this fisherman. Here is a man who would become an influence that is unbelievable almost. This morning Brent read from 1 Peter. And 1 and 2 Peter are wonderful epistles to help us in our faith and our struggles. But the story of Peter himself is equally exciting. And Peter was an impetuous man, a strong man, a man who did not know himself as well as he needed to. But the Lord knows us better than we know ourselves, and he reveals to Peter here something that is taking place in his desire for his future welfare. And so Satan is real, and he wants you, and he wants me. Do you believe in a personal devil? Most Americans, according to the Barna Research Group in Oxnard, California, in a survey some decade and a half maybe, found that 2 out of 3 Americans no longer believe that Satan is real. They think it is a symbol of evil, that he is not a living being, but just a symbol. And that has remained consistent in their research when they have sampled a number of times after that, that more and more people that you and I will deal with laugh off the devil and joke about the devil and do not believe that he is a personal devil, and that he is a person, a being, I should say, that is vilely interested in us. The Bible reveals, though, a very different picture from that perception. And that perception may be a kind of surprise to us because of the people that we associate with. But the man on the street, the people generally in America, I suspect share that conviction, or lack of conviction, maybe I should say, about the devil. In the book of Job, Satan and God conversed. If you do not believe in Satan, do you believe in the book of Job? In that book, it is clear that that being was interested in the soul of Job. In Matthew chapter 4, Satan and Jesus conversed. Is Matthew true? You would have to discount and deny what Matthew has said if you did not believe in a personal devil. Peter certainly writes of that, and he has had a long acquaintance with the ways that the devil is able to tempt people. And he writes in 1 Peter 5 and 8, "Be sober, be vigilant, Your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And so the Bible reveals that Satan is very real, and he is a being who is very interested in our temptation and our downfall. Paul spoke of Satan as real. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11, he spoke in an optimistic way about his hope that the Corinthians might not be ignorant of his devices. And he was talking there particularly about the device of discouragement. And one of the ways that Satan gets to us is when we're down, when we're really down, when we're discouraged. And so he encourages them to pick up and to help that man who is so discouraged over the mistakes he has made in his life, because he said we are not ignorant of his devices. We do not want Satan to get the upper hand. Paul spoke of Satan as very real. One writer has said we should be well acquainted with the character and strategy of the evil one, neither dwelling on it too much, nor ignoring his active and destructive work. And so there's a happy balance to have as we think about our study about Satan and our realization that he is after us. But the devil wants to put you in a special kind of a box. He wants you to be in his control. And revealed here is the desire that Jesus says that Satan has. He has desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat. You may have in your Bible some references there to the book of Isaiah and to the book of Amos. In both of those places, the sifting of people is mentioned. The sifting of Israel, the scattering of Israel among the nations. And so it is a familiar illustration in Bible times. A sifter was like a sieve. It was like that which you would use to sift something. And Satan wanted to do that with Simon. Now, the devil's box. I've been in the devil's box. I have been where all of those currents and all of those things that come against us can come against us, and we're pulled first one way and then another. Has Satan ever boxed you in? I have shown here in an illustration, and I hope it'll come up in a minute. I thought it was on this program, but a large sifter. And some of you may be familiar with those that were old implements that farmers used many years ago. And it was like a wooden box about so big and about so deep. And the bottom was a screen. And you put your seed in there, a small quantity of them, and then you would do this kind of action. I've watched my father do that again and again. And you would sift the seed. And you would get rid of the impurities. But the action of sifting is interesting. As you go back and forth and round, as you shake the seed, then there's an action that is taking place. And every movement that you make is multiplied, as it were, in this sieve or this sifter, so that they are tumbling about. There's no stability at all. Now, imagine people in a sieve. Imagine them when they are being shifted back and forth. And Jesus says, Simon, Satan has desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat. In other words, that he may tumble you about, that he may keep you off balance, that there will be constant movement and motion, and you will not be able to stand. And he's desired to get you in that circumstance. Now, when we think about temptations, when we think about trials, one of the favorite tools that Satan has is to catch us off balance. I was talking to a friend of mine who was a carpenter, and he said, Carl, I no longer get on roofs. And I said, why? And he said, well, the last time I did, my head began to swim a little bit, and he said, I couldn't keep my balance very well, and so I made my way to the ladder and got down, and I'm not going on a roof again. That is a most unsettling feeling, to be off balance. But one of Satan's favorite tools is to catch us off balance. And at a time when Peter felt very confident and could say to the Lord, I won't leave you. I'll go with you to prison. I'll go with you to death. I'll die. Others may forsake you, but not me. Then Satan is able to come against him. Sometimes he is able to catch us off balance when we feel very confident, when we feel cocky, when we feel like we've got everything under control. Better watch out. That is a time when Satan likes to get at us. And so Peter was going to be sifted. In the reading that Rick read a few minutes ago, you see that just following this protestation that he was so strong and that he would go with Jesus to prison or even unto death, you find that he is tempted and he is at the enemy's fireside, and people begin to say to him, you're one of them, I believe. I believe you're one of his disciples. You're a Galilean, and that's where he is from. And of course he begins to resist that and to deny and even to swear and to curse that he does not even know this man. And so the devil has caught him off balance. And the very thing that he said he would not do, he begins to do. And when he realizes that, when the rooster crows, then Peter goes out and weeps bitterly. He realizes that Satan has won that victory. And so one of the very favorite tools that Satan has is this box, this sifter. It was a common thing in Palestine. It was an old implement and even came down to recent years. As a child, my father had one of those that I believe had belonged either to his father or grandfather. And so before he would sow a little patch of wheat or buckwheat or whatever he was sowing, he would take the seed and would sift them in that sifter. He would shake them and twist that, and they would tumble about, and the impurities and the weed seed would fall out, and only the seed that were desirable would remain. Satan desired to put Peter into that kind of movement. And when we are caught up in the currents of life, and when this happens and that happens and then another thing happens, then we are caught off balance. And just because we have suffered today and we have endured successfully a given thing does not mean that Satan will not tempt us tomorrow. Just because we have been strong and we have tried so hard and we can breathe a sigh of relief and say, I've weathered that storm. Be careful. Satan likes to get at us just after we have won a victory. And here, just after Peter is saying that he is so strong, he is brought to his knees to realize how very weak he is. And so the sifting of the person, the sifting of Peter, was a way that Satan was going to get at this man. I want to think with you about how the devil wants to put us in a box. He wants to put us into that same circumstance. David was in the devil's box. He was being tried when he committed sin with Bathsheba. Over in 2 Samuel chapter 11, if you read the surrounding context, you will see that this was a wonderful time for David. It was a time when he had rest from his enemies. It was a time when everything seemed to have been solidly established in his kingdom. Nations were subjugated to him. Joab, even as this happens, is away in a military campaign that he is certain to win and come back victorious. And so here is a king who is doing very well indeed. Everything is going very well with David. And then one evening he walks out on the roof of his palace and looks across the way, and there's a beautiful woman bathing herself. And he is tempted. And he sends for her. Don't you know his servants and people in his household realized what he was about? Here's the king of Israel. No one is going to deny his request. And so she comes to him, and he commits adultery. And then, not long after that, she sends word to him that she is with child. and her husband is away fighting for David, for the Israelites. But he sends for him, and he tries to get him to go and be with his wife, hoping that when the child is born, he will think it is his. And so Uriah is being used as an instrument to further the deception. But he refuses to do so. He said, how can I go home and be with my wife when my brethren are living in tents and they're camping and fighting the king's battles? I can't do that. I can't receive this special treatment. And so he refuses to do so. And David tries a second time. And he is unsuccessful. And then he resorts to arranging for his death and causes that good man to be killed. And so David is caught in that web of circumstances where one sin leads to another. And he hides one lie with another lie. And then he hides those, he thinks, with getting rid of the man himself. And the Bible is remarkable in its comments on that. It says what David did not please the Lord. Indeed, indeed. And so here is a man who is caught. He is caught in the web of circumstances of his own making. And Satan often boxes us in and puts us in his sifter, and we are pushed this way and this way, and we tumble about, and we are unable to find our footing and stability. And that is one of the favorite tools of Satan. In Joshua the 6th chapter, there's the story of Achan. Achan was in the devil's box. He was in his sifter. The order had been given when they conquered Jericho not to take any of the accursed thing. These were heathen people. And anything that they might have of great value was to be taken. Any gold or silver or precious garments or whatever was to be taken and dedicated into the service of God. It would become a part of the tabernacle furnishings and implements. And so that was the order. It was clear. There was no mistaking. God gave them the victory just as he had predicted that he would. They went in and took the city, but there was a man named Achan who saw a beautiful garment that had been imported from Babylon, a wedge of gold. He saw things he wanted, and so he was attracted to that, and he took them, and he hid them beneath the floor of his tent. And no one was the wiser, he thought, but Satan was boxing him in. He was about to be pushed by one circumstance and then another, And when the word went out that there is sin in the camp, he kept silent. He didn't say anything. And so Joshua asked the Lord to show him who was guilty so that they could go on with their campaign to take the land of Canaan. And so tribe by tribe, family by family, God gave the indication until they finally came to the family of Achan. And Joshua said, my son, give glory to the Lord. Tell us what you've done. And so he confessed that he had done that. And he was taken out, and he and his family paid the price. I have gotten, through means I do not know, Terry, an old outline. And so I'm going to have to discontinue that and just preach without that for the rest of the time. Our faith, Peter's faith, is mentioned in this passage. And Jesus says to Peter, when you are converted, when you have changed your life, then strengthen the brethren. What the Lord desired was that Peter's faith fail not. He said, I prayed for you that your faith fail not. And so here is the Lord whose great desire is that Peter succeed. And to think that the Lord is for us in our conflict with Satan, when we are, as it were, being sifted by the devil, is a wonderful thing to anticipate. He is on our side. and he was on Peter's side. And so Peter has the assurance that that will be. And no doubt later, and reflected in the two wonderful epistles that he wrote, is the fact that our faith can prevail. And so Jesus prayed for the faith of Peter. When you think about our faith is that which strengthens us. It is that to which we hold as we deal with the unseen world. He said to Peter, I have prayed for you that your faith fail not. And our great desire is that in times of crisis, in times when we are unable because we are being tumbled about in Satan's sieve, in his sifter, in his box, when we are being tumbled about by all the things that come against us, that our faith will stand. Now, the desire to do that is so important. Your desire and my desire that our faith fail not is critical. If I want to be stronger, God will help me to do that. And there are very practical ways to do that. And so I want us to encourage, I want to encourage you to think about that with me. I know that you could think, if you were making a list and you were going to present a lesson, let's say, ways to strengthen our faith. There are obvious ways. One is what you're doing here this morning, is you have assembled with others of like precious faith. To be with those who have endured, those who have gone through some hard times, those who have been strong in the face of temptation and trial is a wonderful thing. Those with whom we associate have much to do with the formation of our character and the strength that we have day by day. And so, to attend, to be with other Christians, certainly to read from God's Word is an obvious thing, to meditate upon what He has said, that is faith building. Our faith comes from the Word of God. And so to read these Bible stories and to look at these Bible principles, to realize here is God talking to me through the pages of His book, is a way for us to be strengthened in our faith. I think that one of the great ways to strengthen our faith is to enjoy our songs. We are so blessed by many who have written songs that will strengthen us. It's a joy to concentrate upon those words. The song, Great is Thy Faithfulness, says, Great is Thy Faithfulness, O God, my Father. There is no shadow of turning with Thee. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. As Thou hast been, Thou forever shall be. And so while Satan is pitching all kinds of changes, and there are all of these currents, and our being is being tumbled about, as it were, in Satan's sieve, then here is one who does not change. And we are able to be with one, and we are able to depend upon one who does not change. The song, Abide With Me, Abide With Me, fast falls the eventide, the darkness deepens, Lord, with me abide. But especially verse 2, swift to its close ebbs out life's little day. Earth's joys grow dim, its glories pass away. Change and decay in all around I see. O thou who changest not, abide with me. And so when there are so many changes in our lives, and one of Satan's tools is to bring those to us so rapidly that we are hardly able to cope with them. You know, if everything just stayed the same and we figured out how to do and how to get along, then it'd be all right. But it doesn't. Nothing stays the same. And so it is this constant change that Satan often is able to use against us. But here is one who will abide with us, and so we can say, O thou who changest not, abide with me. There's a third song in our book entitled Hold to God's Unchanging Hand, and the first verse of that song says that time is filled with swift transition. We could all attest to that. Naught of earth unmoved can stand. Build your hopes on things eternal. Hold to God's unchanging hand. And so to hold to the hand of one who changes not, when our life is filled with change and when there are all of these currents and things are swirling about us, is a way that we can avoid Satan's box, his sieve, as he would sift us and try our faith. And so Peter learned a wonderful lesson that day. And as we think about our ability to do that and our faith, we need to be encouraged by worship, by study, by talking to God in prayer, by our songs. There is encouragement everywhere if we will take it and use it in our daily lives. And then our influence that we have on others is so very important. I want to close with an incident that happened in my life a number of years ago that illustrated to me how wonderful it is when we hold on to our faith and hold on to our moral courage. I came to Huntsville, Alabama. I may have been here before, but as a college student, came in the summer of 1960, and the company for which I worked, the Southwestern Book Company, told us to spend Saturday night at a motel and then inquire as to the nearest place of worship of our preference and to have the announcement made that we needed a place to stay for the summer. And so I did that, and the announcement was made, and an older couple came to me after the services and said, you can stay with us during the summer. I just needed a place to be at night and bathroom privileges. And so I came to know Sam and Willie Brewer. Not far from here, as the crow flies, as we say, they lived at that time. And they ran a little grocery store on Clinton Street. The name of it was Tom Thumb. And it was a forerunner, I guess, of the modern-day convenience store, a little open store. You came off the street. And I was by there one day as I went door-to-door selling my wares, and stopped for a Coke. And I said to Brother Sam, as I noticed the customers coming and going, looks like you have a good business. He said, well, we do. We've been greatly blessed. But it was not always that way. He said, actually, when we bought this business, it was brisk. It was thriving. But there was something about it that really bothered us, and that is that much of what we sold was beer. And he said people would come here on Fridays and stock up for the weekend, and he said that bothered Willie and me. He said, of course, we do not drink, and we're against it, and we teach our children against it, but here we were selling it. And so we talked about that, and we made the decision that we would stop selling beer. We didn't know what would happen because that was a great deal of our business. And he said, sure enough, when we did, people were amazed. There were people who couldn't believe it. Our distributor thought we were crazy. And our sales took a nosedive. Sure enough, he said, we thought we were going under. But then he said an amazing thing happened. We began to get some customers that we hadn't seen before. And gradually our business came back and then even exceeded what it was before. And he said, I've always been so thankful that we've made that decision. I don't know how you feel about that. And I guess one could rationalize and say, well, it's a business and making a living and they didn't use it and they were against it, et cetera, et cetera. But I will tell you what I believe. I believe that the Almighty smiled as he looked down and saw this Christian couple make that hard moral decision, doing the best they knew, what they thought they ought to do, and that he blessed them for it. And I believe that he will bless us likewise when we make hard moral decisions, when based upon all that we know about God's Word, we decide to do the best we can. I believe that God will bless us. And so here is Peter, who is about to be tossed around in Satan's sieve. He is about to be sifted like wheat. But finally, in the end, we see him as the great Apostle Peter, who preaches the first sermon to the Jews and the first sermon to the Gentiles, and who writes those wonderful books toward the end of our New Testament. And he has endured. May God help us to do likewise. And if today you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, or you need to be restored and recommit your life to the Lord, then we invite you to do that as we stand and sing together.